This Sandwell News podcast is divided into chapters.
Welcome to the 7th of March edition of the Sandwell News for the blind and vision impaired community living in and around Sandwell.
For the second week of March, sunrise will be at 6:35, sunset at 6 p.m. Still quite warm at 13 degrees Celsius.
We include news from the last week's editions of the Express and Star paper, courtesy of Express and Star Publications, and some items from other sources, Talking News Federation bringing us the week ahead's radio and TV listings, and a few other items as well. And we have news from local sources, including on a regular basis what's coming up at SVI, which you'll hear about now.
Hello, SVI members, friends and volunteers. Here's the list of activities taking place next week. Monday 9th March, Ray-Ban Meta Glasses Awareness Session, West Bromwich Town Hall, 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Following Sunny Bain's popular sessions in January, we've invited Barry Lane from Beacon, who will give us a practical hands-on demonstration of the glasses and look at how they can help you with day-to-day activities and tasks. It is important to book for this session, as attendance numbers will be limited in order to give people the chance to get the most out of the morning and to get hands-on with the glasses. Let's talk about IT, West Bromwich Town Hall, 12:30 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. Come along to join us for an informal session where we'll chat about all things IT. Whether you're a tech whiz or just getting started, everyone's welcome. This month we will have Kevin Priest from Black Country Housing and Barry, who is going to stay with us for the afternoon session. Kevin will also be with us on Monday, 13th April and 11th May. Tuesday, 10th March, gym at Portway Lifestyle Centre, 10 to 12 noon. Break a sweat and boost your energy with fellow SV. I members. From treadmills and bikes to weights, there's something for everyone, and plenty of support to help you along the way. It's a fun, social way to stay fit and active all year round, rain or shine. Line dancing at Dartmouth Central Club 1 to 2:30 p.m. Put on your dancing shoes and join Ray and Jean for a lively line dancing session full of fun and feel-good moves. Whether you're looking to stay active, improve your balance, or simply meet new people, this is the perfect chance. Absolute beginners are welcome. Just come along and enjoy. We'd love to see you on the dance floor. Wednesday, 11th March. Showdown at Portway Lifestyle Centre, 1 to 3 p.m. Come and join us for this fast-moving, interactive sport that's a mix of table tennis and air hockey. It's specially designed for blind and visually impaired players, but the best part is anyone can play and everyone has fun. Expect laughter, friendly competition, and a chance to try something a little different. Why not come along and see what it's all about? Thursday, 12th March. Women's Group Italian Meal at Amalfi Blue New Square, West Bromwich, 6:30 p.m. Join us for an early evening meal at this new Italian restaurant and find out what all the shouting is about. Reviews are amazing. Two courses, £20 and 95 pence. Three courses, £24 and 95 pence, or just order from the menu. Ladies are welcome to bring a guest. Pay on the night, but booking through the SVI office is required, so give us a call. It is important that you contact the office, either by phone, message, Facebook, or email, to let us know that you are attending any of our events. That's all for this week. We look forward to seeing you soon. The SVI Team Sandwell, Visually Impaired West Bromwich Town Hall, Lodge Road. West Bromwich B 708. AY. Telephone 01215254810. Website. sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk.
Some of the pieces from this week's readings from the Express and Star. Wednesday, the 25th of February. 60% of adults delay seeing their GP honorary doctorate for smile for Joel Campaigner. Teenager accused of attempted murder of mother. Thursday, Ramsey's short reign at Albion. Sandwell popular with first-time housebuyers. Peaky Blinders soundtrack to be released. Friday, Dementia Cafe. Can Morrison inspire the Albion? Reminder to get your shingles jab. Saturday, the facts about the Peaky Blinders. Council tax rise. A new skills campus. 200,000 birthday cards for Amelia. Monday, Tipton Academy. Morris says, Albion not as good as we think we are. Tuesday, Labour councillor quits to join right-wing party. Dangerous driver locked up. Take a look at the new Peaky Blinders tram. Morris steps up. What's next?
Yes, Neil. Well, what's next is a selection of those stories and more coming up from the papers. And there's plenty in there about West Bromwich Albion's fortunes or lack of them. And let's hope they manage to keep a toehold in the Championship. Here's the first day's news then from the papers.
Hi everyone, it's Mia. Today I'm going to be reading some newspaper articles from Wednesday the 25th of February 2026. I hope you all enjoy. Nearly 50% of adults delay or avoid seeking help from GP, new survey reveals. Nearly half, 48% of all UK adults avoided or delayed contacting their GP about a health concern last year, a new poll suggests. People cited difficulties contacting their local practice, opting to wait for the problem to go away, and not expecting to be offered a suitable appointment as reasons behind their decision. Accessing a GP is the public's main priority for the NHS, along with improved A&E waiting times, the poll suggests. Meanwhile, 2 in 5 adults, 42%, believe the general standard of care provided by the NHS worsened in the last year, polling conducted in December suggests. Only 1 in 8, 12%, believe it's improved, according to a survey conducted by the Health Foundation Ipsos of 2,200 UK adults. Our findings signal that too often people are going without the care they need, which risks storing up health problems further down the line and placing more strain on an already stretched service, said Tim Gardner, Assistant Director of Policy at the Health Foundation. A report compiled by the think tank says public confidence in the government's NHS policies remains low, with 54% disagreeing that their government has the right policies for the NHS, compared to just 15% who agree. The government has promised to boost access to family doctors in England through a new GP contract, backed by a £485 million investment. The contract requires all patients with urgent needs to have access to a same-day GP appointment. A separate £300 million of existing money in the service will be ring-fenced to help recruit additional GPs or increase hours of current family doctors, the Department of Health and Social Care said. Ministers have also made changes to a controversial recruitment scheme for GP practices to expand the number of medics who can be employed using the additional roles and reimbursement scheme. Health Secretary Wes Streeting said the government was fixing the front door to the NHS, adding, "We're giving practices the flexibility to hire more GPs and backing them with extra funding to do so." Chris McCann, acting chief executive at Health Watch England, said, "People consistently tell us that GP services are becoming harder to use and that simply getting through the door for care can be a challenge. We often hear from individuals who wait in long telephone queues for an appointment, only to be told that all slots have been taken and to try again tomorrow. Plans to recruit more doctors should make it easier for patients to get appointments and ensure urgent cases are handled more quickly." Charity campaigner Susie to receive an honorary doctorate. The inspirational work of charity fundraiser Susie Richards, whose son, brother and father died in a terror attack in Tunisia, has been acknowledged by the university. Both their sons attended through a set of honorary awards. Susie Richards is set to be awarded both an honorary doctorate and honorary fellowship from Worcester University, the university which both her sons, Owen and Joel, attended. Miss Richards from Wensbury will receive her awards at the graduation ceremony in March for her inspirational work in creating the Smile for Joel charity, which supports families affected by murder and terrorism. Joel Richards had been studying at the university when he died alongside his grandfather Pat and uncle Adrian in the Sousse massacre in Tunisia in 2015, while his brother Owen was wounded but survived. Joel had been studying to be a teacher at Worcester when he died, and last year the university started a scholarship in his memory, while Owen went on to study graduate from the university in 2021. Wensbury-based Susie and Owen Richards set up the charity Smile for Joel in the months following the massacre and have since raised many tens of thousands of pounds to support families who were victims of terrorism and murder, and also worked to raise awareness of safety abroad. The honorary doctorate and honorary fellowship are the latest honours to be bestowed on Susie Richards, having won a Pride of Britain award and also been recognised with an MBE in 2023. She said news of the award had been an honour and a shock, and spoke about the moment she received the award. She said, "It's such an honour to receive an honorary degree and honorary fellowship from the university. It came as a complete shock as I received the letter, and as I read it, I realised I had been chosen, and I was so surprised. I read the letter, and it outlined how I had been selected because of the way I had dealt with such loss, and coming through the other side of it and setting up the charity. I just do what I do to help people and raise awareness." Worcester University said that to be awarded both an honorary doctorate and an honorary fellowship was a rare distinction and symbolised the close relationship between the university for Susie and for Owen, who is currently back at the university studying for his postgraduate certificate in education and to earn qualified teacher status. Susie said, "The first time I attended a graduation in Worcester Cathedral, I was collecting Joel's degree. The second visit was to celebrate Owen receiving his degree, and the third visit will be special for a different reason, as I am there to receive my own award. So me, Joel, and my son Owen will have all received our awards from Worcester University." The letter arrived during the 10th anniversary of when Joel died, and that very poignant. Teen is accused of stabbing mum and leaving her for dead. Accused fled barefoot into railway tunnel after carrying out attack, court is told. A woman, who was allegedly attacked and left for dead by her son at their Smethwick home, told detectives the episode was a blur in her mind, a court heard. Jonan Walker, aged 18, is accused of attempting to murder Ursula Lawrence in St Paul's Road in Smethwick on March 25th last year. She was found lying on the floor and soaked in blood by another of her children after suffering a wound to her neck, a broken nose, and fractured eye sockets in the early hours of the morning. Walker is on trial at Wolverhampton Crown Court, accused of attempting to murder his 56-year-old mother, who was already suffering from ill health when the incident happened, in the kitchen of the semi-detached house. He denies attempted murder and wounding with intent. As part of the prosecution's case on Monday, Miss Lawrence's police video interview was played to the jury. Speaking slowly and wiping tears from her eyes, she told the officer the incident was a blur. "I was in my bedroom when he came in. He didn't say much. I took him to the kitchen to make him some food to eat. I was in the kitchen near to the sink, and that is all I can remember. We weren't arguing. I was just looking around for something to fix for him. The rest of it is a blur. The next thing I remember is being in hospital and feeling a lot of pain," Miss Lawrence said. She explained that there had been an incident days earlier when Walker had asked for the PIN number for her phone so he could use it. "I put on a birthday party for him on the 19th, but he got upset because I'd invited a couple of our friends, whom he said weren't his friends. I gave him my PIN number because I didn't want an argument. He gave the phone back to me and left." The jury heard a witness statement from relative Regan Lawrence, describing how a text message was received from another of Miss Lawrence's children at about 1:30 a.m. after the attack. I tried to call him back 3 times, but didn't get through. Then I got a WhatsApp saying Jonan has stabbed my mum to death. I got in my car and got there within about 8 minutes. I could see the police and the ambulance were already there. There was police tape all around. I gave my cousin a cuddle. At this point, he thought his mum was dead. The police officer asked me if there were any previous trouble involving Jonan. I told him about a previous incident at Christmas 2024, when he phoned me in the middle of the night, but I was trying to sleep. He phoned repeatedly and I didn't answer. He then called my sister. My mum got Jonan to come to our home. The witness added that the defendant behaved in an inappropriate manner during the visit. The jury was also shown CCTV images tracking Walker's movements the previous day and afterwards. The court heard following the attack, he fled barefoot to Smethwick Galton Bridge railway station, where he was captured, running around the deserted platform before heading into the tunnel. Train services were halted before a police helicopter crew spotted him on waste ground. The trial continues. 2 counsellors face court to deny assault and affray charges. 2 counsellors have pleaded not guilty to affray and assault charges following an incident in Cradley Heath last year. Sandwell counsellors Daniel Millard and Claire Mayo both pleaded not guilty to separate charges of affray and assault at Dudley Magistrates Court yesterday, following an incident in Surfite Hill Road, Cradley Heath, in the early hours of July 20th last year. Daniel Millard, aged 43, pleaded not guilty to 1 count of affray, another count of aiding in affray, and 1 count of assault by beating. Claire Mayo, aged 40, pleaded not guilty to 2 counts of affray and 2 counts of assault by beating. The pair were granted conditional bail following the hearing and will next appear at Wolverhampton Crown Court on March 24th. Mr. Millard and Miss Mayo were both suspended by the Labour Party following the incident, but remain as independent councillors on Sandwell Council. On this day, February 25th, 1570, Queen Elizabeth I was excommunicated by Pope Pius V, who declared her a usurper. 1601, Robert Devereux, Earl of Essex, was executed for high treason after trying to raise the City of London against Queen Elizabeth's councillors. 1723, Sir Christopher Wren, English architect and designer, notably of St. Paul's Cathedral, died in London and was buried in the crypt of his cathedral. 1862, Abraham Lincoln issued new currency for the USA called greenbacks. 1873, Enrico Caruso, operatic tenor, was born in Naples. His first record, On With the Motley from Pagliacci, was the first to sell 1 million copies. 1922, French mass murderer Henry Bluebeard Landru was guillotined for the murder of 10 women and a teenage boy, whose bodies were never found. 1939, the first of 2.5 million Anderson air raid shelters appeared in Islington, North London. The sunken, corrugated iron huts were to protect people from bombs, but were used after the war for keeping chickens, cars, garden tools, etc. 1964, Cassius Clay, later Muhammad Ali, won the world heavyweight boxing title for the first time, knocking out Sonny Liston in round 7 in Miami. 1983, Tennessee Williams, US playwright whose plays include A Streetcar Named Desire, died in a New York hotel. On this day last year, Sir Keir Starmer denied that Donald Trump was setting UK government policy, as he said that the choice to increase defence spending to 2.5% of GDP is very much my decision.
It's Jan Lloyd reading articles from the Express and Star on the 26th of February. Boss axed with shortest reign of any Albion boss. Eric Ramsay has claimed the unwanted record of having the shortest reign of any permanent Albion manager, lasting just 44 days. The 34-year-old was axed on Tuesday night just 6 weeks and 9 games into his tenure as Albion head coach, with a record of 5 defeats and 4 draws. Ramsay also became the only permanent Albion boss in the club's history not to win a game. His record eclipses that of Tony Mowbray, who was given just 17 games in charge of the club during his second stint last year, as the Abaggies slipped out of the playoff picture. Mowbray, who had won the championship title with Albion in 2007-08, was axed last year after a second stint at the club, which resulted in 5 wins, 5 draws and 7 defeats during his 3-month stay at the Hawthorns. Ryan Mason then came in as permanent successor in the summer, but he lasted only 27 games. Mason was replaced by Ramsay last month, and the Shropshire-born boss struggled from the outset, and he was relieved of his duties, having failed to reach double figures in terms of games managed. That is far fewer than the next lowest, which were Mowbray and Pepe Mel, who were both sacked after 17 games in charge. Mel, who served as Baggies boss between January and May 2014, oversaw only 3 wins during his time as Albion manager. In the club's recent history, the next shortest terms were Alan Pardew, who was sacked 21 games into a disastrous run of results in the Premier League, and Alan Irvine, who was given 22 games in charge. Sam Allardyce spent 26 games in the hot seat at Albion before leaving the club back in the summer of 2021. Looking further back in the history books, World Cup winner Nobby Stiles departed the club after just 21 games in charge of Albion, while former striker Ronnie Allen's first stint in charge came at the end after 22 games. Two arrests after drug discovery. Two men have been arrested after police spotted a suspected drug exchange in Smethwick. West Midlands police officers were patrolling around the Grange Road area in Smethwick on Monday evening when they spotted the suspicious activity by a silver Audi, which fled the scene quickly. Failing to stop for police, the vehicle was being driven dangerously through roadworks and red lights. After being stopped by officers, two men were detained. Following searches, police recovered mobile phones, cash, cannabis and cocaine. A 23-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of possession with intent to supply Class A drugs. A 30-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of possession with intent to supply Class A drugs and driving a vehicle dangerously. They have both been bailed pending further inquiries. First-time buyers attracted to the value of towns near Brum. Borough in Region has cheaper than average housing, but still close to Second City, by Vicky Shaw. An area of the West Midlands has been one of Britain's top first-time buyer hotspots outside London. Lloyds analysed locations outside London where first-time buyers make up the highest proportion of mortgaged home purchases. It said that in Manchester, first-time buyers made 70.2% of mortgaged home purchases last year, up from 67.2% in 2024. But second on the UK list is the Black Country borough of Sandwell, where property levels are £45,000 lower than the average for the region and £70,000 lower than the average in the UK. Just under 70% of house sales went to first-time buyers, with the average price set at £185,235. The report said Manchester's mix of relatively affordable homes, strong job opportunities, major regeneration projects and a well-connected transport network continued to draw in younger buyers. Sandwell benefits from its affordability and its excellent transport links both to Birmingham and to the Black Country. The average first-time buyer property price in Manchester is £230,090, nearly £25,000 below the average first-time buyer price of £254,920 across Britain, according to Lloyds. Glasgow has the highest share of first-time buyers of any local area in Scotland at 61.2%, snapping up homes for £182,910 on average. In Wales, Rhondda Cynon Taf is the top hotspot at 57.9%, and with an average house price of £156,035. While the biggest concentration of first-time buyers are usually found in major towns and cities, the fastest-growing markets are often in smaller towns and more rural areas. The report said the West Midland city of Worcester leads the way in this respect, with first-time buyers accounting for 58.7% of the local housing market in 2025, up sharply from 40.6% in 2024. Raffle winner gets keys to colourful VW by Dan Stacey. The keys to a one-of-a-kind Volkswagen Polo were handed over to a lucky competition winner following a Black Country Workshop Santa's a Gangster charity raffle. Volks Magic in Albury run the appeal every year for local children's charities and were able to donate more than 10,000 new gifts to children amongst the West Midlands over the 2025 Christmas period. Those who donated were entered into a raffle for a number of bespoke items made at the workshop, including a car, a snap-on toolbox and a vintage BMX, all designed in Harlequin style to mark 30 years since the car company unveiled the design. Managing Director Lee Southerton arranged the handover of the car with competition winner Jane Davies at Volks Magic site on Park Lane in Albury and admitted he found it tough to say goodbye to his baby. "It's a sad day for us, it really is," Lee began. In 2025, the VW Polo was 50 years old, the Harlequin theme was 30 years old, and Santa's a Gangster turned 10 years old. The lucky recipient was Jane Davies from Penn, who entered the raffle after spotting the car at the V-Dubs Festival. And there's a picture of Jane, with tinsel around her neck, getting into the car, which has a red bonnet, yellow front wings, a purple door and purple bumper, red back door, a bright green rear section, and I can't see the boot, but I guess that's even a different colour. And there's a picture of the Volkswagen Magic Workshop in the background. She looks very happy with her win, so she should be. Martin dives into swimming after grief of losing his wife. By Greg Rees. A local man has rediscovered his zest for living through the physical and mental release of swimming at Sandwell Aquatic Centre and the community feel of the facility. Martin Lindup, aged 72, recently lost his wife Carol, his soulmate of more than 3 decades, and suddenly life felt painfully quiet. Motivation disappeared, days blurred into one another, and the loneliness was overwhelming. "She was so full of energy," Martin says. "We did everything together and for a while I struggled to cope." It was a friend who gently nudged Martin towards Sandwell Aquatic Centre, SAC, in Smethwick, recommending the over-60s swimming sessions in a way to get back into a routine. Martin hadn't swum regularly for a long time, apart from the occasional holiday dip, but last summer he decided to give it a try. So, when he first walked through the doors of SAC, one of 8 facilities operated by Core Wellness, formerly Sandwell Leisure Trust, on behalf of Sandwell Council, he wasn't just looking for a swim, he was looking for a way forward. "I was completely blown away," he explains. "The size of the place, how clean it was, and the whole theatrical look of it, it's stunning." Very quickly, swimming 3 times a week has helped Martin rebuild structure in his life, but it's the people that have made the biggest difference. Through the over 60s sessions, he's met others who understand loss and change, people from different cultures and backgrounds, many of whom have also said goodbye to loved ones. "We laugh, we talk about the old times, and we just enjoy being around each other," Martin adds. "You realise you're not alone. The coffee shop has become just as important as the pool itself. Before and after his swims, Martin can often be found sitting with friends and sharing stories." SAC staff have also played a huge role in making him feel welcome, They're always friendly and helpful, and they go out of their way to stop and chat, he says. And there's a picture of Martin, I presume, in the cafeteria by the look of it, at Sandwell Aquatic Centre. Peaky Blinders film soundtrack to be released by Daniel Morris. As the West Midlands gets ready for Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man, to hit cinemas on March the 6th, news has arrived that a soundtrack is being released to supplement the film. Put together by RCA Records UK, the album features the film's score by Peaky Blinders series collaborators Anthony Glenn and Martin Slattery, as well as original songs from Grian Chatton, Fontaines DC, and Amy Taylor, Amel and the Sniffers. Also included on the soundtrack is a curated selection of needle drops from artists who have shaped the Peaky Blinders sound. Highlights include a newly recorded version of Nick Cave's Red Right Hand, Chatton's collaboration with Lancome on Hunting the Wren, the Immortal Man version, and the two transformative Massive Attack covers, one by Chatton and the other by Girl in the Year Above. The soundtrack will be released digitally on March the 6th. Actor Cillian Murphy, who plays the Birmingham gangster, said, "It seems like Tommy Shelby wasn't finished with me." Fellow Irish star Barry Keoghan will also be joining the cast as Tommy's son, Duke. Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man, is at cinemas from March the 6th. And don't miss our Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man souvenir edition on Saturday. And the article is accompanied by a photograph of stars Barry Keoghan and Cillian Murphy in an image from the new film Peaky Blinders, both of them dressed in their Peaky Blinder costume.
Hey, it's Gavin. Hope you're well. I've got some readings for you from the 27th of February.
Boy, 17, is charged after teenager was stabbed to death. A 17-year-old boy has been charged with the murder of Zeshan Afzal near a mosque in Smethwick. Zeshan, aged 18, was discovered with serious stab wounds following a disorder near the entrance of Jamia Mosque on Albury Road, Smethwick, just before 9 p.m. on February the 20th, and despite the best efforts of medical teams, he was pronounced dead a short time later. The 17-year-old, who can't be named for legal reasons, was due to appear at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court yesterday morning for a first hearing. Inquiries are continuing into the murder, with West Midlands Police asking anyone with information to contact them directly. A force spokesperson said Zeshan Afzal, aged 18, was discovered with serious stab wounds following disorder on Albury Road just before 9 p.m. on 20th February. He was sadly pronounced dead a short time later. Our inquiries are continuing and we urge anyone who has not yet spoken to us to come forward. Dementia Cafe provides Lifeline. A care home is celebrating the success of its Dementia Cafe. The Forget Me Not Cafe at Dovedale Court in Wensbury, named following a popular community vote, has become a highlight of the week for residents, staff and visitors alike, offering a warm, welcoming environment filled with laughter, conversation and engaging activities. Guests enjoy dominoes and tiddlywinks, as well as fun history and music quizzes. The Dementia Cafe takes place every Wednesday from 10:30 a.m. until noon, providing a safe and friendly space for people living with dementia, their families and the local community to come together over hot drinks, tea and delicious cakes. Spaces are limited, so booking is required. Home manager Dawn Allen said, "We are so proud to see our residents, staff and visitors enjoying these sessions together. Forget Me Not is a place for smiles, laughter and meaningful connection." Opportunity knocks, but can Morrison inspire the Albion? James Morrison is to take charge of Albion for a fourth time with Saturday's relegation six-pointer at second bottom Oxford. There is so much up in the air at the Hawthorns, not least the Baggies' championship status, and just who is going to be the man to pull the club out of the mire for the next 2 months. Eric Ramsay's tenure of 6 weeks and 44 days was brief but unravelled to leave the club in a perilous position and facing a make-or-break period in the weeks ahead. Morrison, 39, will have the opportunity to give an account of his credentials at the Kassam Stadium for Saturday's huge clash. It is crunch afternoon for the club as they tackle one of the precious few clubs below them in the championship reckoning. There are a dozen fixtures left, but they will disappear quickly and Albion need at least a handful of victories to lift them to around the required 50-point mark. The Baggies have won just four games and have sacked two permanent head coaches since the middle of October. It is not out of the question Morrison could occupy the hot seat for the remainder of the season, but for that to play out, the first team coach must find a way to spark a squad with next to no confidence into a run of positive results. He must find a way to inspire a tune from an ailing squad quickly. There is no belief or muscle memory in the ranks. Saturday's hosts, Oxford, managed by former Wickham and Luton boss Matt Bloomfield, have been second bottom for some time, but still have Leicester and the Baggies within reach. The easiest way forward for the powers that be at the Hawthorns would be for Morrison to hit the ground running in Oxfordshire. It would begin to ease the desperate outlook and would buy time for games ahead. The following clash is a trip to Sheffield United on Saturday week. The Blades have improved from their dire start and Bramall Lane is seldom a straightforward away day. More concerningly for the next two is Albion's hapless away record in general. Though Morrison's FA Cup penalty shootout success in Swansea last month was some rare joy away from the Hawthorns, it is unlikely Morrison will make sweeping changes to the starting 11 selected by Ramsey for the 1-1 draw against Charlton at the Hawthorns on Tuesday night. It was about the best Baggies had delivered under the 34-year-old winless head coach, who was axed an hour and a half after the full-time whistle. Albion looked better for having the returning George Campbell at right back and creator-in-chief Mikey Johnston delivered his best display in a couple of months. But Morrison must inspire something as close to an all-round team display missing from the Baggies for several months. Oxford will see Saturday as a huge opportunity to make a late surge for survival. It is up to Albion to show there is some fight left in the ranks after the latest change. And we've got three images here. The firstly is of James Morrison, kitted out in the Albion coat on the training field. And then there's an image of the former manager, Eric Ramsey, looking a bit glum in his seat. There's a caption underneath that says, James Morrison will be looking to hit the ground running on Saturday as he starts his bid to replace Eric Ramsey, who was sacked on Tuesday night. There is also an image of the team that's going to be played against Oxford on Saturday. So you've got O'Leary in goal, Bielik and Phillips centre-back, Stiles on the left, Campbell on the right, Mowat and Diakite and Mulumbi in the middle. And then you've got Johnston on the left, Price on the right and Hegabow up front with the substitutes Griffiths, Gilchrist, Imre, Taylor, Wallace, Jimmo Aloba, Bostock, Maja and Dyke. And it's got Oxford's 4-2-3-1 with Cumming, Long, Macasso, Brown, Curry, Volks, Branigan, Mills, Pert Harris, Gion and Lancashire. It does say that the big match prediction is a home win. If you don't want to know the score, please stop listening now. I'll give it a couple of seconds. Yep, the Albion did lose 2-1 on Saturday. So the big match home prediction was right.
Fewer older people are getting shingles jab, says NHS. Shingles is an infection that causes a very painful rash. Latest data from the NHS shows that only 1 in 3 people aged over 65 have had their shingles vaccinations in Cambridgeshire and Peterborough. The vaccination helps prevent the chance of getting shingles and reduces the chance of getting serious problems if shingles is contracted. Latest figures showed that more than 9,000 over 60s have not yet completed their 2 shingles vaccinations. Statistics also showed only 1 in 3 70-year-olds, which is about 7,000 people, had not had their first shingles vaccination. The health service found that about 16,000 people were eligible for the vaccination. Immune system can be weakened. You might think that because you've had chickenpox, then you have immunity from shingles, but this isn't the case. When you get chickenpox, the virus stays in the body. It can be reactivated later and cause shingles if your immune system is weakened. We would urge anyone who's eligible to come forward and have this vaccination. It can prevent you from getting shingles or reduce the severity of the symptoms if you do get it. An NHS spokesperson said, anyone turning 65, those aged 70 to 79 and those aged 18 and over with a severely weakened immune system will be invited by their GP surgery to book a shingles vaccination. 2 doses of the vaccination are needed for these groups of people. Shingles is an infection that causes a very painful rash. It can show up on your chest and stomach, but could appear anywhere on your body, including the face and eyes.
This is Linda, reading from Saturday the 28th of February's Express and Star. The Truth Under the Caps. Dan Morris chats to Professor Carl Chin, who splits the peaky facts from blinding fiction. Proud Birmingham patriot and the world's premier authority on the real Peaky Blinders, Professor Carl Chin, MBE, sat down with us for a chat to help separate fact from fiction ahead of the release of Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man. In his latest book, Peaky Blinders, The Real Gangs and Gangsters, Carl delves into the stories of the real men and women who were part of the times and illuminates how the drama we love is, of course, just a drama, yet the reality is all the more brutal. I've gone back to the real Peaky Blinders and looked at them in a lot more detail, said Carl. I wanted to understand who were the men, who were the worst people, who were the gang leaders, what were the worst gangs. I wanted them to be to embed that within a broader context of time and space. In the book, Carl paints the picture of the class divide that existed in Victorian and Edwardian Birmingham, and how this played a huge part in the birth and growth of the region's gangs. Birmingham was praised as the best governed city in the world, but the poor didn't see any of that, he said. I wanted to understand why so many men, young men and then older men, remained violent and petty thieves all their lives. What made them that way? And I came to the conclusion that they were marginalised. They were excluded. They had no political power. They didn't vote. It wasn't until 1918 that all working class men got the vote. So they were politically excluded. But they were also economically excluded. Bar for a few rare exceptions, they were labourers, unskilled men and street traders. They were scratching around for a living. So they got no political power and no economic power. And no cultural power in a class-based system. The only thing they've got is their fists. I'm not excusing it, but we have to understand that this was a really, really physical world, and hardness was valued to be able to survive. Grandson of a Peaky Blinder himself, Carl has spent a 40-year career digging into the stories and history of the working people of the 19th and 20th century Birmingham. With this, he is able to set the record straight about the pop culture presentation of the Peaky Blinders, including the truth about their famous fashion and how they actually came by their moniker. The Backstreet Gangs really came in from 1868-69, and from 1872 they were known as sloggers, said Carl. From 1890, the term Peaky Blinder came in for sloggers who had a new fashion. They were wearing Billy Cock hats, and they had skinhead haircuts and a quiff. They wet the brims of their hats, held them over a fire, and they make it like a funnel. Then they pull it over one eye, blinding the eye. This is where the name comes from. When the flat cap comes in, they do the same. With this, we were curious to find out if there was any truth to the legend of the razor blades in the peaks, portrayed as a weapon of choice for Tommy Shelby and co. in Stephen Knight's drama. I'm afraid there isn't, said Carl. They couldn't afford safety razors. Working class men went to the barbers for a shave. In the First World War, British Tommies were given cutthroat razors. The American soldiers from 1917, when they joined the war, were given disposable safety razor blades, but our lads weren't. Alongside this, Carl points to another fable surrounding the so-called dapper gangsters. There was a fashion that distinguished them, the quiff, the silk scarf knotted at the front, the bell-bottom trousers. But a lot of Peaky Blinders couldn't afford all this fashion, he said. In the drama, we see them wearing very sharp new suits, but in reality, they would be more likely to be wearing second and third-hand clothes, really poor quality clothing. Yet, as Carl illuminates, the biggest difference between reality and what we see on screen is the morality of the men behind the flat caps. The real Peaky Blinders were not anti-heroes. They weren't Robin Hoods, he said. They were very violent men, thugs, and not meant to be admired. They baited the police and they bullied the hard-working poor amongst whom they lived. They were not misunderstood men who were respectful to women, kind to children, and who looked after the elderly. In reality, there was nothing glamorous about them. though Peaky Blinders has, naturally, been created using a helping of artistic license, Carl is delighted about the impact the show has had and hopes that this will continue now the small Heath's most scurrilous are headed for the big screen. Stephen Dight has been very successful in drawing younger people into wanting to know more, he said. The Black Country Living Museum has boomed because of the filming there, and I'm hoping that this Digbeth Lock Studios in Birmingham is a huge success, because in the West Midlands we've lost out to Manchester and Salford and London in terms of studios. I wish him every success, and I'm sure this new film will be great. Peaky Blinders, The Real Gangs and Gangsters by Carl Chin is available now. Carl was also interviewed for feature documentary Peaky Blinders, The Real Story by Reel to Reel Films. This is available to buy or rent now on iTunes, Sky, Amazon, Google, Virgin and Rakuten. Council tax rise to cover things that matter most. The average council tax bill in Sandwell is said to rise by £111 after a near 5% rise was backed by councillors. Sandwell Council agreed its 2026/7 budget at a meeting on Tuesday, which also includes increasing spending on roads, parks and a new CCTV to combat fly tipping and antisocial behaviour. The agreed 4.99% increase in council tax would see the average Band D bill rise by £111 from April next year, including a £5 increase in the precept for West Midlands Fire Service and a further £15 uplift for West Midlands Police. The bills for Band A and Band B homes covers around three quarters of Sandwell households would rise by around £74 and £86 respectively. Councillor Paul Moore, the Labour on Council's Cabinet Member for Finance, said the authority would be investing millions in the things that mattered most to residents, including £1.5 million to maintain and repair roads, potholes and pavements, and an extra £1.3 million to help combat snow, ice and flooding during cold winter months. He added the council would install more than 60 new CCTV cameras to help tackle fly tipping and antisocial behaviour, as well as almost doubling funding, totalling nearly £1 million, for a rapid response team that will track down those dumping rubbish across the borough. Funding to combat antisocial behaviour would also double, and a further £1 million would be invested to improve road safety, including, the Cabinet Member for Finance also said, £1 million would be spent to improve Sandwell's play areas, including Jubilee Park in Tipton, Friar Park in Wensbury, Victoria Park in Smethwick and Redwood Road, Yew Tree, West Bromwich. And as many as 34 new pop-up recycling centres would also open to help reduce waste sent to landfill. Is the Keir considered to be at risk of flight? Starmer is known to have strong links with Brussels. Breaking news. Ports are on alert amid a tip-off Sir Keir Starmer might be a flight risk. There has been a pattern of behaviour in which he is out of the country when the heat is on, said one anonymous. That means in the best tabloid tradition, I've made it up, source. Starmer is known to have strong links with Brussels, where he is rumoured to be trying to get back into the good books of a notorious international gang. He is also known to have associated with a Mr. Big in America. He has made a surprise appearance in the Manchester suburb of Gorton a few days ago, where, in a speech designed to give voters the willies, he warned of the desired consequences of a reform victory. I predict a riot, he said, or words to that effect. And don't vote for the Greens, don't call me Dave either, as their policy of legalising drugs is disgusting, he soberly advised. Mancunians responded in the way you might expect to an Arsenal supporter. They told him to do one. The Gorton and Denton by-election was a battle for the nation's soul, Sir Keir declared. He's now a lost soul who can't even frighten people into voting for him. He needs a hug from Andy Burnham, who can give him some comradely advice. Time to do one, mate. In leading MPs in giving Andrew Mountbatten Windsor a good kicking, Sir Chris Bryant described him as rude, arrogant and entitled. At least that means he's not insufferably self-righteous. The former Prince Andrew denies any wrongdoing, copyright the BBC, in a breach of Westminster Convention in which MPs have historically not had a go at the royals. Can anybody explain Willie Hamilton to me then? You have to be quite old to know what I mean. The Speaker, Sir Lindsay Hoyle, gave Sir Chris and others free rein, and at no point did the saintly Sir Chris tell Sir Lindsay to bleep, bleep, bleep off, as the Sun and Daily Mail claimed a while back, which he denied, although we never did learn what he said, which led to a grovelling apology. Royalty are indeed entitled. Titles they've got 'em. Prince, Duke, Duchess, take your pick. The economy is ailing, growth is anemic, unemployment is grim, and the cost of living is high. Rachel Reeves denies any wrongdoing. Pensioners, farmers, the countryside and the rich have been declared enemies of the people. There have been U-turns on this and that, and political dissidents are being banged up. Sir Keir Starmer denies any wrongdoing. Implosion of 14 years of Tory government. Kemi Badenoch maintains her innocence. As for the Horizon scandal, no blame attaches to Sir Ed Davey when he was Postal Affairs Minister, Sir Ed has pointed out. At an award ceremony for a film about somebody with severe Tourette's, you invite along somebody with severe Tourette's. What could possibly go wrong? I mean, when receiving a gong from the Queen a few years ago for his good works, raising awareness, the chap shouted, bleep, 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 the Queen. Apparently, the military band had some difficulty playing their instruments afterwards, but the late Queen didn't bat an eyelid, although no doubt her awareness was raised. As it happens, earlier in the BAFTA, somebody shouted at Prince William, is the monarchy in peril? Which can only have caused him embarrassment and distress, as the poor chap says he is not in a calm state at the moment. I'm not sure if that shouty person had Tourette's, but I think it's more likely that it was a reporter, as this heckling style of questioning is becoming prevalent and is a pet journalistic hate of mine. You know the sort of thing, shouting across the streets at some politician something like, are you a liability to the government, minister? Which, as intended, gets a slot on the news. But you never get the answer, and the question was not put with the intention of getting an answer. Official launch on the way for Skills Campus. A new Skills Campus built in the heart of Cradley Heath to bring practical training and adult learning courses to locals is said to be officially opened. The new Cradley Heath Skills Campus, funded by the Town's Fund, aims to offer new opportunities for local residents to upskill and retrain. Located in Lower High Street, Cradley Heath, the new venture opened in January and is set to host a VIP official launch event on Monday. The new purpose-built campus, which Sandwell College Principal and CEO Lisa Kappa, MBE, said has some fantastic facilities, has been opened to expand local access to education, training and upskilling to support people to progress into work, retrain or develop new skills close to home. The modern building comprises industry standard equipment for training in construction, trades, digital and health and social care, as well as practical spaces designed to reflect real working environments. The community-focused campus offers options for school leavers wanting vocational or technical routes and adults looking to retrain, upskill or return to learning, with programmes shaped around employer demand and local workforce skills. Unbelievable 200,000 cards sent to Amelia. An unbelievable 200,000 birthday cards have been sent to Amelia Culper ahead of her special day next week. It had been the wish of 7-year-old palliative care patient Amelia Culper to break a record for the most birthday cards to be received as she turns 8 on Tuesday. Amelia, from Rowley Regis, has been in and out of hospital since the age of 2 and a half with neuroblastoma and had set a target of 8,000 cards for her birthday. Now, ahead of the big day, her family have revealed that more than 200,000 cards have been collected from all over the community, including more than 60,000 from the Hells Angels, with more still coming in. Her aunt, Charmaine Grace, said the family had been blown away by the response and offered thanks to everyone who had taken the time to send Amelia a card. She said, "We can't thank you all enough, as it's not only made Amelia's dream come true, but it's also helped to tell people about neuroblastoma and actually understand what it is through Amelia's story. We really can't say thank you enough times. It's unbelievable. Anyone who wants to send a card can drop it off at Highfield Primary School, Rowley Regis, or Liso's High School, Hales Owen.
Hello, this is Janet reading from the Express and Star for Monday, the 2nd of March. Man charged over store theft. A man has been charged after items were stolen from a bakery in Sandwell. On February the 23rd, items were stolen from a bakery on Birmingham Road, West Bromwich. The same store was targeted again on Wednesday, February the 25th, just 7 minutes after opening. A few hours later, the store was targeted for a third time, but was spotted by a West Midland police officer. Nick Fullard, aged 38, has been charged in connection with three counts of shop theft, public order and assaulting an emergency worker. He has been remanded in custody to appear at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court, West Midlands Police said. Man jailed over zombie knife. A man has been jailed after police seized a zombie knife from him. Officers from West Midlands Police's Guardian Task Force were patrolling around West Bromwich on Monday, where they spotted two men acting suspiciously, and following a short foot chase, they were detained on Overend Street. One of the men, Jesse Boaki, was seen throwing a zombie knife under a car. He was arrested for possession of a knife and charged. The 19-year-old of Cape Hill Smethwick appeared before Wolverhampton magistrates on Tuesday, where he pleaded guilty and was jailed for 8 months. Project Guardian is a specialist task force which tackles knife crime and youth violence. There is emphasis on reducing knife crime through a range of tactics, from plain-clothed operations to high visibility patrols and positive engagement with young people. A school where students don't just aim for the sky, they aim for the stars. Tipton's Ocker Hill Academy isn't just a school where students come to learn, it's a community where pupils strive to be the very best they can be. Ocker Hill Academy on Gospel Oak Road is a school where students don't just aim for the sky, they aim for the stars. Their motto, "Aim High, Aim Higher," embodies their belief that not only should they be active contributing members of society, but also leaders in the international community. Senior staff greet children each day with a smile and strive to nurture a professional relationship with students that instills a sense of belonging, respect and inclusion for all. Led by Principal Mr. Joe Farmer, this facility isn't just a school for the education of our young learners, it's a community where students strive to be ambitious and passionate community leaders. Ocker Hill Academy's mission statement is deceptively simple: to provide children with a safe and dynamic learning experience. While seemingly simple, the mission holds enormous weight in its hallways. All children are given access to a broad and balanced curriculum that is both fun and engaging and challenges their abilities. Mr. Farmer said, "Our mission at Ocker Hill Academy reflects a passionate commitment to providing children with a safe and dynamic learning experience. Driven by a desire to offer the best possible education, all children have access to a broad and balanced curriculum where they are encouraged to think deeply in lessons and taught knowledge-based objective and skills as building blocks for life. Learning is underpinned by strong formative assessment principles. Pupils understand and celebrate what they do well and where their next steps in learning lie, preparing them to be successful, knowledgeable and responsible citizens for the future. Children are encouraged to be active members of their communities and are encouraged to join their in-house eco-council and be conscientious and thoughtful of the environment. With the efforts of their young eco-minded learners, the school was even granted the Eco Schools Green Flag Award. Mr. Farmer said, "We encourage children to be active members of the community. At Christmas, we make cards for local care homes and send groups of carol singers to entertain residents. We encourage children to apply to join our council, which has led us to achieve the Eco Schools Green Flag Award at the highest level. Our children are conscientious and thoughtful about the environment. We also provide an opportunity in school for every child to learn to ride with bikeability and also later to progress to level 1 and 2, including bike maintenance and road safety. The Academy also places a focus on inclusive provisions, providing a specialist environment in which autism specific disorder, ASD, and a highly trained team of staff members work with specialist teachers and a local authority. Mr. Farmer said, "Our focus provision offers 10 places for children with a diagnosis of autistic spectrum disorder. Our refurbished provision offers a specialist environment in which children with ASD can thrive. We have a long and proud tradition of children with special needs making outstanding academic and pastoral progress. Our highly trained staff work extremely closely with specialist teachers from the local authority and parents to implement bespoke programs of work for each child. Make fun learning and accessible." In all, Ockerhill Academy says that their pupils value learning and understanding the importance of hard work and achieving success, with each pupil coming to work smiling and ready for the day. Mr. Farmer added, "Children are always eager to come to school. Each morning the children are greeted at the door by staff and always have smiles and stories to share. Children value learning and understand the importance of hard work to achieve success, which they do in heaps. Ockerhill makes learning fun and accessible to all children and offers a broad range of opportunities to develop both academically and as well-rounded individuals." Retrospective plans for cash and carry warehouse refused. Councillors reject application to use former ambulance station as wholesalers. By Christian Barnett. A council has rejected plans to continue using a former ambulance station as a cash and carry wholesalers after it opened without permission 2 years ago. Khaled Mohammed began using the former ambulance station in Harget Lane, West Bromwich, next to the town's fire station in 2024 and had applied to Sandal Council to formalise the arrangement after not obtaining planning permission. However, planning officers at Sandal Council have refused the retrospective application, saying the use of the former station as a warehouse was inappropriate for the area. The council added it was having a detrimental impact on the neighbouring Hargate Primary School and nearby homes. The council had received complaints and had been provided with CCTV footage that showed lorries reversing along the narrow Hargett Lane, which is signposted as unsuitable for HGVs. Sandal Council's highways officers also objected, saying the warehouse was causing safety issues and Mr. Mohammed's application had lacked detail. A handful of objections had been made, including one from a neighbour who said the area was already congested with cars and a number of shipping containers were making the area look like a port. "Already we have received various reports of articulated lorries using this street, despite there being a weight limit on the road and vans associated with the premises parking on the double yellow lines outside, the objection said. This is not an area which can cope with a storage and distribution facility. Moreover, we understand deliveries are currently taking place to and from the site at all times of the day and night. This is a residential area and is not suited to someone running a business on this size or scale. Moz, not as good as we think we are. Scathing interim boss James Morrison delivered a reality check to Albion's squad and hinted at ripping up the approach in the desperate survival race. Hapless Albion were beaten 2-1 at second bottom Oxford on Saturday, leaving Morrison, after the first match of his third stint as caretaker, claiming, "Maybe we're not as good as we think we are." A visibly emotional and angry Morrison hit out at individuals and the collective after a limp display at the Kassam Stadium in another six-pointer. Albion remain one place and 1 point outside the Championship drop zone and winless in the league in 2026. A fuming Morrison said, "Maybe we're not as good as we think we are. Maybe we are where we are. You get what you deserve, really. I think it's the same story throughout the season. I didn't feel any threat in general play. I think they had one shot late on when we were pushing and Max O'Leary saved it. Other than that, it was set plays coming in the box. That was it." Lowly Oxford scored their first home goals in 7 games with an easy early double inside half an hour from 2 set pieces.
Hello, this is Alastair Hutton with an article from Heather. Training is underway for one of the largest litters of puppies welcomed by the charity Guide Dogs. Doggy mum Yori, a golden retriever cross, gave birth to a huge litter of 13 puppies at the end of last summer. A normal litter size averages around 7 or 8 pups. The litter has been nicknamed the Baker's Dozen, reflecting the common historical practice of bakers in rounding up a dozen loaves to 13. It's generally thought the bakers adopted this practice to make sure they didn't fall foul of strict laws that linked the price of their wares to minimum weights. In keeping with the Baker's Dozen nickname, all 13 puppies have been given bakery-themed names. The 6 girls have been called Apple, Eccles, Coco, Chelsea, Custard and Ginger. Meanwhile, the 7 boys have been named Biscuit, Crumble, Bagel, Crumpet, Pretzel, Rye and Tiger. Because of the size of the litter, it was felt that Mum Yori might struggle to look after all 13 puppies. With this in mind, for their first 8 weeks, 10 puppies stayed with Yori, while 3 were fostered by another guide dog with a smaller litter born at the same time. At 8 weeks old, the full litter of 13 was reunited at Guide Dogs National Centre near Leamington Spa. Now embarking on the next step towards becoming guide dogs, each of the Baker's Dozen has a new temporary home with one of the guide dogs' volunteer puppy raisers around the UK. They'll stay with their puppy raisers until they're old enough to join the formal guide dog training programme. If all 13 make the grade, they should be on track to become fully fledged guide dogs next year in 2027. Every year, around 1,350 puppies start their journey to become a guide dog, but it is an expensive business as it now costs £77,000 to breed, puppy raise and train each guide dog.
TNS Soundings.
This is Rosie and I am reading the pub quiz for you again this week. I hope you guys all do really well. I'm going to start out with 6 questions from the news quiz and then I'll be asking 4 questions from the Remember When section, which is which year is this? So here we go. Number 1, which fellow Bond actress did Rosamund Pike say was the best she has ever worked with, describing the veteran star as a mischief maker? Number 2. The Princess of Wales was at Twickenham on Saturday as patron of the Rugby Football Union to watch England play which side in the men's Six Nations? Number 3. Which US rock band announced a surprise gig in Dublin on Monday night? Number 4. How many medals did Great Britain win at the Winter Olympics in Italy? Number 5. Which movie was named Best Film at the 2026 British Academy Film Awards? And number 6. What did Dame Prue Leith say her diet consisted of during the filming of The Great British Bake Off? And the next questions are from the section Remember When. So, number 1, Cliff Richard had a UK number 1 single with We Don't Talk Anymore. Woody Allen wrote, directed and starred in Manhattan. The Shah of Iran fled into exile following a period of protests against his regime. And milk sharply rose to 15p a pint. Number 2, Grace Kelly starred in To Catch a Thief. Jimmy Young had a UK number 1 hit with Unchained Melody. Jazz musician Charlie Parker died. The UK version of This Is Your Life began on television. And the next question is, Disney's Beauty and the Beast was a huge hit. Chesney Hawkes had a UK number 1 single with The One and Only. Dancer Dame Margot Fonteyn died and Winnie Mandela was given a 6-year prison sentence. And the last one. Christie had a UK number 1 single with Yellow River. The film chronicling the legendary Woodstock Music Festival was released. Mick Jagger was fined £200 for possession of cannabis. And Paul McCartney filed a suit against his band members to dissolve the Beatles' contractual partnership. And here are the questions again, this time along with the answers. Number 1 in the news section. Which fellow Bond actress did Rosamund Pike say was the best she has ever worked with, describing the veteran star as a mischief maker? And that is Dame Judi Dench. Number 2. The Princess of Wales was at Twickenham on Saturday as patron of the Rugby Football Union to watch England play which side in the men's Six Nations, and that was Ireland. Number 3. Which US rock band announced a surprise gig in Dublin on Monday night, and that was the Foo Fighters. Number 4. How many medals did Great Britain win at the Winter Olympics in Italy? And they won 5 medals, and that was 3 gold, 1 silver and 1 bronze. Number 5. Which movie was named Best Film at the 2026 British Academy Film Awards? And that movie was One Battle After Another. And number 6. What did Dame Prue Leith say her diet consisted of during the filming of The Great British Bake Off? And I'm sure you couldn't guess, but it was cake and wine. And the next questions are in the Remember When, so what year was this? The first question is, Cliff Richard had a UK number 1 single with We Don't Talk Anymore. Woody Allen wrote, directed and starred in Manhattan. The Shah of Iran fled into exile following a period of protests against his regime. And milk sharply rose to 15p a pint. And that was 1979. And the next one is, which year was it that Grace Kelly starred in To Catch a Thief? Jimmy Young had a UK number 1 hit with Unchained Melody. Jazz musician Charlie Parker died. And the UK version of This Is Your Life began on television. And that was 1955. And the next one is, Disney's Beauty and the Beast was a huge hit. Chesney Hawkes had a UK number 1 single with The One and Only. Dancer Dame Margot Fonteyn died and Winnie Mandela was given a 6-year prison sentence. and that was 1991. And the last question, Christie had a UK number one single with Yellow River. The film chronicling the legendary Woodstock Music Festival was released. Mick Jagger was fined £200 for possession of cannabis, and Paul McCartney filed a suit against his band members to dissolve the Beatles' contractual partnership, and that all happened in 1970. I hope you all did really well this week.
At the meeting with Sandwell Health Watch, people asked for more information about the Urgent Treatment Centre in Sandwell. Urgent Treatment Centre. The Urgent Treatment Centre is based at Sandwell Health Campus, formerly Sandwell Hospital, West Bromwich, and is accessible to all patients. It offers GP-led urgent but not emergency care for ailments such as suspected broken bones, abdominal pain and minor illnesses. Patients from all areas are able to attend. However, if they are not registered with a GP, they will be asked to sign up. The centre is open 7 days a week from 7am to 1am. Appointments can be made by calling NHS 111 or you can walk in. For life-threatening emergency care, please go to the Midland Metropolitan University Hospital A&E department, which is located in Grove Lane, Smethwick.
We must now be clear about how your information is used and the steps we take to ensure it is secure. When you asked to receive recordings produced by the Sandwell Talking News, you gave your name and address so that we could send you our memory sticks or CDs. This information is stored in a secure database and address labels are also stored in a secure location. Having left our premises, the address labels and postal wallets are then under the protection and care of Royal Mail. Your contact details are only used for sending you our memory sticks or CDs and will never be forwarded to a third party. If you ask us to stop sending the Sandwell Talking News to you, your contact details will be deleted from our database and your address labels will be permanently destroyed. We promise and assure you that we take data protection seriously and make every effort to meet the requirements of the Data Protection Act. If your circumstances do change, you move home, change your phone number, or wish to unsubscribe to the Sandwell Talking News, please call the office on 0121 525 4810 or email sandwelltn@gmail.com so that we can make the necessary changes.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, this is Wharfdale Talking News with your audio-described TV programmes for the period Saturday the 7th to Friday the 13th of March 2026, compiled and read by Val. So we start with Saturday the 7th of March. A recipe for chicken covered in a zingy yoghurt marinade is on the menu in Nadia's Simple Spices on BBC One at 11:30am. This is followed by Bargain Hunt from Nottinghamshire at 12 o'clock, also on BBC One. Lots of sports this week, starting with coverage of the Winter Paralympics on Channel 4 today, and continuing each day this week from about 8 in the morning to about 1 or 2pm, with highlights at 6:30pm. As usual, most of this week's sports programmes are not audio described, but the commentary should give you an idea of the action. So continuing with today's sport, England versus Iceland in the Women's World Cup is on ITV1, kick-off 12:30. Scotland play France in this afternoon's Six Nations rugby match, kick-off at 10 past 2 on BBC One. And over on ITV1, Italy play England, kick-off at 4:40pm. Wrexham meet Chelsea in today's FA Cup match, kick-off 5:45pm on BBC One. There are three episodes of Midsummer Murders on ITV3 at 4pm, 6pm and 8pm. It's the last of the quarterfinals in Gladiators on BBC One at 8pm. Ian realises that life will never be the same again, while Dylan steps up for Matty in tonight's episode of the hospital drama Casualty at 9pm on BBC One. There are two episodes of the drama The Turkish Detective on BBC Four at 9pm. On the 50th anniversary of the war, the comedian travels down the Indochina Peninsula in tonight's episode of Bill Bailey's Vietnam at 9pm on Channel 4. The Unlikely Pilgrimage of Harold Fry is tonight's film on Channel 4 at 10pm, starring Jim Broadbent as a pensioner who walks 500 miles to visit a friend in a hospice. Anna processes her emotions in the hospital, Rachel struggles in rehab, and Maggie plans her future. The Walsh Sisters continues on BBC One at 10 past 10. On to Sunday, 8th of March. Sunday with Laura Koonsberg, featuring interviews with politicians and key public figures, is on BBC One at 9am. Liz and Calvin enjoy a rare day off in Fletcher's Family Farm on ITV One at 11:25am. The fantasy action sequel Spider-Man 3 is the afternoon film on BBC One at 3:25pm. Or over on ITV One at the same time, there is the action adventure Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Two game shows on ITV One. Lee Mack hosts the 1% Club at 5:40 and Rob Brydon presents the grand final of The Floor at 6:55pm. Sister Veronica must decide her future with the Order in tonight's episode of Call the Midwife on BBC One at 8pm. The return of the mystery thriller The Capture starts on BBC One at 9pm. In this week's episode of Forensics, The Real CSI at 9pm on BBC Two, the team race to identify the attacker of a woman in a telephone box. Headmaster Michael Polly arrives home to find there's no sign of his wife in the first episode of the six-part psychological thriller Gone, starring David Morrissey and Eve Miles, on ITV One at 9pm. Continues tomorrow at the same time. Find out who is crowned champion in the Great Pottery Throwdown, the final, on Channel 4 at 9pm. The Oscar-winning war drama Platoon is tonight's film on BBC Two at 10pm. Here are those programmes which are on at the same time throughout the week. On BBC One, Homes Under the Hammer is at 12:15, Tuesday to Friday. Bear Grylls' Wild Reckoning is at 2pm, Monday to Thursday. Amanda and Alan's Spanish Job is at 2:30pm Monday to Thursday, and The Repair Shop on the Road is at 3:45pm Monday to Friday. On ITV3, there are two episodes of Heartbeat starting at around 5:45 or 5:50pm Monday to Friday. Now for Monday, the 9th of March. In the final episode of the current series of Fletcher's Family Farm on ITV One at 7:30, a break in the weather offers a chance to save the valuable harvest. It's time to get your thinking caps on again for Mastermind at 8pm and University Challenge at 8:30pm, both on BBC Two. In tonight's visit to the Caribbean, Mervyn stumbles upon a crime scene while searching for his brother Solomon on Antigua. Death in Paradise is on BBC One at 9pm. The mathematician concludes her look at the AI revolution by investigating the increasing influence of algorithms in our lives. AI Confidential with Hannah Fry is on BBC Two at 9pm. The second episode of the thriller Gone continues at 9 p.m. on ITV1. Some of the cuffed pairs grapple with being chained to their total opposite. Handcuffed, Last Pair Standing is on Channel 4 at 9 p.m. The time arrives for Michael and Casey to exhume the profits from their pile of manure. Small Profits is on BBC Two at 10 p.m. A new series of the comedy series Trying starts with a double bill at 10:40 p.m. on BBC One. Now for Tuesday, the 10th of March, more professional chefs serve up dishes in honour of the British film industry in The Great British Menu on BBC Two at 7 p.m. It's time to declutter as a new series of Sort Your Life Out with Stacey Solomon starts on BBC One at 8 p.m. Knockout Week begins as the remaining chefs battle for a place in the semi-finals of MasterChef The Professionals on BBC One at 9 p.m. The broadcaster continues her look at the future of Europe in Germany, where she visits the village which is the ancestral home of a certain Trump family. Europe on the Edge with Katja Adler is on BBC Two at 9 p.m. Only 6 climbers remain on the journey up one of New Zealand's highest peaks. Find out what happens to them in The Summit on ITV One at 9 p.m. In a new 4-part series of the crime drama Ellis on Channel 5 at 9 p.m, Ellis and her assistant are sent in to help investigate a businessman's murder. Continues at the same time tomorrow. Wednesday, 11th of March. Great British Menu continues on BBC Two at 7 p.m. as the 3 remaining chefs prepare main courses and desserts inspired by the movies. Knockout Week continues as the remaining chefs are split into 2 groups in MasterChef The Professionals on BBC One at 8 p.m. In the second episode of the documentary Hostage on BBC Two at 9 p.m, we sample the horrors of the Syrian Civil War via the continuing story of British journalist John Cantley, taken hostage in 2012. The return of the documentary following the work of ambulance services in Yorkshire returns tonight. Call handler Abby deals with an abusive caller who is dialing 999 every minute, and a major road closure leaves a critical patient waiting for an ambulance. Ambulance is on BBC One at 9 p.m. Elisa steps up her viral social media campaign to help find her daughter. The Stolen Girl is on ITV One at 9 p.m. A new 8-part drama series starts tonight, based on Barbara Taylor Bradford's bestseller, charting the rise of a woman from impoverished maid to international business tycoon. A Woman of Substance is on Channel 4 at 9 p.m. Continues at the same time tomorrow. The second part of the crime drama Ellis is on Channel 5 at 9 p.m. Thursday, 12th of March. Steel Magnolias, starring Dolly Parton and Sally Field, is the early evening comedy film at 6:40 p.m. on Film 4. The 2 highest-scoring chefs must serve their entire menus once more to secure a place at a banquet celebrating the British film industry. Great British Menu is on BBC Two at 7 p.m. More entrepreneurs enter the Dragon's Den at 8 p.m. on BBC One. We visit Tiger Country at Bandipur National Park in the second episode of Alexander Armstrong in India on Channel 5 at 8 p.m. Now for a documentary that recalls the campaign to ban handguns following the deadliest mass shooting in British history. Dunblane, How Britain Banned Handguns is on BBC Two at 9 p.m. Faye thinks she has found the man of her dreams, but soon a dark truth comes to light with tragic consequences. A Deadly Betrayal, True Crime Presents, is on ITV1 at 9 p.m. The second part of the drama, A Woman of Substance, is on Channel 4 at 9 p.m. A couple running a pub in the sleepy village of Monksley in Suffolk seek help from the hotel inspector on Channel 5 at 9 p.m. And so we come to Friday, the 13th of March. The priest tries to prove the innocence of a man standing trial for murder in today's episode of Father Brown on BBC One at 2 p.m. The second group of chefs visit London's Boxhall Food Hall to impress insiders from the street food world. MasterChef the Professionals is at 7:30 p.m. on BBC One. Mervyn and the team investigate the murder of a local newspaper's agony aunt in tonight's episode of Death in Paradise on BBC One at 9 p.m. We see some serious lion battles right next to the camera trucks in tonight's documentary Big Cats 24/7 on BBC Two at 9 p.m. Dominic West and Ruth Wilson starring what is described by the Radio Times as this addictive American drama about the consequences of an extramarital relationship. The affair is on ITV One at 9 p.m. An inebriated Gacy reveals how he groomed, assaulted, tortured and murdered his victims. Devil in Disguise, John Wayne Gacy, is on ITV One at 10:55 p.m. We end the week with an evening of music on BBC Four. At 9:05, St Patrick's Day at the BBC features archive performances of Irish musicians ahead of St Patrick's Day on 17th of March. This is followed at 11:05 by Enya at the BBC, and finally a 2016 performance by Van Morrison from the BBC Radio Theatre. Do hope you find something in this week's selection that will appeal to you.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, March 7th. And drama, Secrets and Lies, The Road to Suez, Radio 4, 3 o'clock, Saturday afternoon. Putting you through, caller, the start of a week of programmes marking the 150th anniversary of the telephone. Radio 4 Extra on Saturday afternoon at 5. Opera on 3 is an opera from Vienna, Die Fledermaus, 6 o'clock, Radio 3. And Loose Ends, chat with Clive Anderson and guests, 6:15, Radio 4, Saturday evening. Sunday, March 8th, Counterpoint, the music quiz, 4:30, Sunday afternoon, Radio 4. Desert Island Discs is revisited on Radio 4 Extra at 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. Dustin Hoffman, the actor, is the subject of Desert Island Discs Revisited. The Open Post, A Girl's Guide to Fighting Hitler and Stalin, 7:15, Radio 4, Sunday evening. While Richard Strauss and Us, the composer's links to Great Britain, 7:15, Radio 3, Sunday evening. Alternatively, Paul Gambaccini and his collection of music choices, Radio 2, 8 o'clock, Sunday night. On to programmes then that are serialised all week, Monday to Friday. So same time, same radio station each day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Book of the Week, The Tenth End of the World by Tillamazzo. The true story of how a sea captain's wife in 1856 took over the helm of a ship during a perilous voyage. 11:45 every morning, Radio 4. Stephen Fry on the Phone, a look at the evolution of the mobile phone. 1:30 all week, Radio 4 Extra. If you miss it, it's also at 7:30 p.m. all week. Jeremy Vine has music and discussion between 12 and 2 every weekday afternoon on Radio 2. Well, Composer of the Week this week, New Zealand composers, so no one in particular. Radio 3, 4 o'clock all week. And finally, for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all at the same time, same radio station, Nobody's Perfect by Lionel Shriver, a 30-something loner, dips her toe into the world of dating apps. 10:45 every night on Radio 4. Back to the individual highlights for each day then, Monday, March 9th. And there's comedy drama, Prepper, Two Women have a podcast about surviving the breakdown of society. 215, Radio 4. Radio 3 in Concert includes work by Palenque and Vorjak, 7:30 p.m, Radio 3. How Did We Get Here? 8 p.m, Radio 4, a history of the Middle East conflict. Jolly Diamond and guests talk about it on Radio 4 at 8 p.m. And The Blues Show with Kerris Matthews, Radio 2, 9 p.m. on Monday. Tuesday, March 10th, Add to Playlist returns 11 a.m. with 5 musical links from one to another to another to another to another. Radio 4, 11 o'clock in the morning, Tuesday morning. Classical Live has music by Mozart, Ravel and Haydn at 1 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon on Radio 3. While the Book Club is the drama on Radio 4, a 75-year-old Greenham Common veteran faces her family. 2:15 for the Book Club, Radio 4. What's Up Docs? The Causes of Toothache is the subject on Radio 4 at 4:30 on Tuesday afternoon. And as it is a Tuesday, the latest news for the blind and partially sighted with In Touch with Peter White, 8:40 p.m, Radio 4. And The Jazz Show with Jamie Cullum, 9 o'clock on Radio 2. Wednesday, March 11th, and Classical Live, music to take you from winter to spring, including the works by Haydn, Ravel and Schubert, is on Radio 3 at 1 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon. There's drama on Radio 4, Overnight, a night shift in a housing association call centre. 2:15, Radio 4. And The Folk Show with Mark Radcliffe is on Radio 2 at 9 p.m. Thursday, March 12th, and The Second Map, accounts of the Asian Front in the Second World War. Radio 4, 11 a.m. Open Country, The Rock Houses of Staffordshire with Martha Kearney. Radio 4, 3 o'clock. The Matt Ford Focus Group, a light-hearted conversation with politicians, is on Radio 4 at 6:30 p.m. Stephen Fry on the Phone, input from the original mobile phone engineers, continues the week of special programmes on Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 p.m. The Country Show with Bob Harris is on Radio 2 at 9 p.m. Or alternatively, there's a thriller on Radio 4 Extra, Innocent Victim, the drama, 9 o'clock, Radio 4 Extra, Thursday night. Finally, Friday, March 13th, the food programme Posh Water, Tap versus Bottled, 11 a.m. on Radio 4. Soul Music focuses on Wichita Lineman, 4 o'clock, Radio 4 Extra on Friday afternoon. The Naked Week, a satirical look at the week's headlines, is on Radio 4 at 6:30 p.m. in the comedy slot. Well, Add to Playlist returns from Marvin Gaye to Prokofiev, 7:15 p.m. Radio 4. And Free Thinking, Taste. What does it mean to have good taste? Hopefully we've got it with these radio choices. Free Thinking, Taste, Radio 4, 9 o'clock on Friday night. That's it. Thank you to Angela for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
TNS Soundings.
Hello, this is Trevor reading articles from the Express and Star from Tuesday, the 3rd of March. 250,000 send their love to little Amelia. A quarter of a million birthday cards as girl suffering from neuroblastoma marks a special day with close family. An outpouring of love was today given by the people of our region to Amelia Culper on her 8th birthday. The number of cards sent to her from well-wishers is now approaching a quarter of a million. Amelia, who is suffering from neuroblastoma, was today marking her birthday quietly at home with close family. But she knows just how her story has touched Black Country people following an incredible response. Amelia from Rowley Regis had wanted to break a record for the most birthday cards received, with an original target of 8,000. Her aunt, Charmaine Gray, says she had been continuing to collect cards for Amelia and she is expecting them to top 250,000. Today was being marked by friends, family and supporters performing the Macarena, with flash mobs and get-togethers. The song and dance is Amelia's favourite and she asked people to film themselves so that she could watch them. Amelia's family say the support shown by complete strangers has been an enormous source of strength to them as they continue to care for the 8-year-old who is receiving palliative treatment. Miss Grace said, "She's just a girl who leaves you with a smile on your face, and she'll text me through her brother's iPad with some of the cutest things, which can come at any time and are just adorable. I've got so many memories of her growing up, and the smile has never left her face. It's always been there. That's what the nation and everyone is going to take with them. So I just want to thank everyone for being part of Amelia's journey. And not only that, Amelia thanks you too. The support has been incredible and it's just brought everyone together and makes you realise not to take life for granted." Councillor quits Labour days after praising budget and joins right-wing party. Sandwell Councillor David Wilkes has quit Labour and joined new right-wing party Advance UK. Councillor Wilkes, who represents the Prince's End ward in Tipton, was elected for the Conservatives in 2022, before quitting the party and joining Labour in 2024. Then in September last year, he had posted, but then quickly deleted a statement saying he had quit Labour. Advance UK was formed last year and is led by former Reform UK deputy leader and Brexit Party MEP Ben Habib. The party's website says it promotes and celebrates the nation's Christian constitution, roots, traditions, culture and values. Councillor Wilkes voted in favour of Labour's 2026-27 budget at a full council meeting last week, calling his former party's financial proposals a good budget. In a press release announcing the move, Councillor Wilkes said, "I have watched successive governments allow immigration to rise to record levels, transforming towns like my own at a pace and on a scale that the public was never properly consulted on. This has led to a deep loss of trust in politics. Britain needs a pause, time to rebuild social cohesion, restore overstretched services and ensure that change happens in a way that is fair and sustainable. I've always been frustrated by the unwillingness of some political leaders to acknowledge the seriousness of these concerns. Strong words are not enough. The country needs action. Above all, my motivation is my children's future. I want them to grow up in a Britain that is secure, confident and united. I believe Advance UK is the movement prepared to be honest about the challenges we face and to take the necessary steps to address them." Councillor Wilkes was elected for the Conservatives in the Prince's End ward in 2022 with 856 votes, but had left the party by the start of the 2024 before joining Labour. Last September, Councillor Wilkes revealed on social media that he decided to leave Labour and would be sitting as an independent. The posts were quickly deleted, with Councillor Wilkes seemingly remaining as a Labour councillor. Dangerous driver who killed loving angel is locked up. This article is by Deborah Hardiman. A dangerous driver who struck and killed a mother as she was returning home from work in Smethwick has been jailed for more than 10 years. Mother of one, Baljit Kaur, aged 62, was struck and fatally injured by a Mercedes driven at speeds of up to 88 miles per hour by Erjon Alias in Thimble Mill Road, Thimble Mill in Smethwick, on August the 28th last year. The defendant, aged 35, was described by witnesses as driving at high speed through the streets of neighbouring Bearwood before losing control of the borrowed car. At the same time, the carer was being dropped off outside her home at about 9:25 by colleague Manveer Kaur. Sentencing Aliad yesterday, Judge Michael Chambers, KC, said Manveer Kaur had parked her car in Thimblemill Road with the tyres on the pavement. Baljit Kaur left the vehicle and was proceeding to go home. He approached from behind and accelerated at some 88 miles per hour immediately before the collision. "You collided not just with the rear of the vehicle, which the deceased had been in, but also a number of others. There were five vehicles involved in total. You clearly lost control of your vehicle due to the speed at which you were travelling, and as you were doing, the carer was struck by the vehicle while she was on the pavement. Her injuries were so extensive that she died at the scene. I take into account your mitigating factors, that you have no previous record and your remorse. You agreed not to have a pre-sentence report carried out, your psychological report, your character references, and I accept that your remorse is genuine. This is your first conviction and first period in custody." Mr. Tariq Shakur, prosecuting, said the defendant's breath test measured 69 milligrams of alcohol in 100 millilitres of breath following the incident, and of three wraps of cocaine were found on him. Tests showed the level of drugs was consistent with it being ingested 24 hours before the collision happened. Mr. Shakur said a witness had described the car as passing them like a missile, moments before it careered from the carriageway in rainy weather. He said witness Dara Racha was the front seat passenger in the Mercedes being driven by Ali Hajj, and she told drivers he was a friend and they met up at a Bearwood Road coffee shop for a chat before he offered her to give a lift home in his new car. She told officers that the defendant was speeding and despite her pleas, he ignored her request for him to slow down. In mitigation, Mr. Bal Singh said the defendant was hard working. However, his relationship had broken down at the time and he blamed this for his actions on the fateful night. Father of two, Ali Hajj, of no fixed address, pleaded guilty to an offence of causing Mrs. Kaur's death by dangerous driving at a previous hearing. He was assisted at the hearing by an Albanian interpreter. He was jailed for 10 years and 6 months, reduced from 14 years due to his early guilty plea. He was also given a 13-year extended road ban and must take an extended test before getting behind the wheel in future. The judge also ordered the forfeiture and destruction of the cocaine found on the defendant after the collision. The court heard that Ali Hajj had been in the UK since 2009. Take a peek at New Tram, named after creator of gangster family drama. Peaky Blinders creator Stephen Knight has unveiled a tram named in his honour and praised its amazing livery, featuring a striking image of a flat cap wearing Cillian Murphy as Tommy Shelby. The honour is in recognition of Knight's work in promoting Birmingham and the West Midlands through the Peaky Blinders franchise, alongside his support for the local creative industry through Digbeth Lock Studios. Speaking at the new tram unveiling in Birmingham, the writer shared his special connection to the city, having been brought up in Streatley. My family are so solidly Brummie and they are all from Smallheath. Our estate was sort of right on the border and just over Barbican. That was the Black Country. People don't realise how different people speak and it was walking distance. I love the Black Country. I love the Black Country accents. I love the people and I love to do something that features these characters. After removing a sticker to reveal the name of the Peaky Blinders themed tram in Centenary Square, Knight said of the honour, it's quite surreal, but it's really, really great. At the event, poet Bradley Taylor performed his poem, By Order of the People, which is in reference to the iconic line, By Order of the Peaky Blinders, and also a nod to the late Benjamin Zephaniah's poem, People Need People. He said he was happy to write a new poem in honour of the special connection between Birmingham and the Peaky Blinders. It was a pleasure to write a poem that celebrates Birmingham as someone who was born here, grew up here, works here, and to celebrate not only Birmingham, but its creativity through the form of Stephen Knight. The debrief. Mikey injury blow. Ollie steps up and what next? This article's by Lewis Cox. Albion's woes escalated with defeat at second bottom Oxford on Saturday as caretaker boss James Morrison watched on furiously. We take a look at some of the talking points in the debrief. Johnson blow. The state of the performance speaks for itself and is the most alarming element. Albion desperately lacked quality and ideas all over the pitch after falling behind on 15 minutes. For 5 or 10 minutes, Morrison's men were bright and winger Mikey Johnson was at the heart of it. In spells against Charlton and for 10 minutes in Oxford, he showed signs of being near his direct best. But an innocuous challenge saw the winger, who had struggled with the knock of late, get his studs cut in the turf and succumb to what he feared could be a serious injury. Johnson looked in real pain. He has not been at his best for some time, but interim Morrison underlined, the blow of losing the squad's biggest threat, it is not something that bodes well for the 11-game dogfight ahead to save Albion's skin. The only highlight from the Kassam was how Johnson's replacement, Ollie Bostock, took his chance. Academy winger Bostock, only recently 19, netted a first senior goal with what proved to be the consolation. It owed to some good fortune with the deflection. If you don't buy the ticket, you don't win the raffle. The highly rated Bostock has shown enough at this stage to prove he can be relied upon. When others have failed, he has delivered enough of his talent in otherwise dour games at Millwall and Swansea in the FA Cup. He underlined it here. is not just the goal. A couple of other wonderful crosses, not attacked by colleagues, were the best of quality on display from the visitors all day. Albion could be Bostock's Tom Fellowes at Birmingham moment. It would be bold enough to have him in from the off at Sheffield United on Saturday, but, and certainly with Johnson's absent, he deserves it. So, play the kids. This is a subject I've skirted around a little bit, mostly because I felt it would be unfair on Bostock, Harry Whitwell, Alex Williams and others to chuck them into this melting pot and seemingly sinking ship. There have also been the case of under Ryan Mason and more recently Eric Ramsey, their head coaches, will not have the trust or time to turn to youth. It would be very brave, boss, to put your faith in the hands of youngsters who have never played senior football when jobs are on the line. We are at a juncture now where Albion needs something, anything, and the senior squad have not delivered for many months. Bostock showed a fearlessness of youth that could be further tapped into. I'm not saying they should all start at Bramall Lane, but all of the above deserve a chance. Before the season's end, relegation on the line or not, they could be the future. It is the case for goalkeeper Josh Griffiths too. Dropped because he was not doing good enough. It feels that there is more value in using him over Max O'Leary. What on earth next? The powers that be, led by Shailen Patel, have a huge call when it comes to their next move on this desperate dogfight. Word was that caretaker Morrison had a chance to stake his claim for the running, but it was not the outcome anybody desired. Morrison will plod on as committed as anybody in this caretaker role, but the likelihood is surely that the club's decision makers have to scour the land to see who is out there. There begs the question which boss worth his salt would want to put his name to this, potentially only the second time Albion have dropped to the third tier in 148 years. There'll be those that fancy it. All managers have to back themselves, but they are suited to a late season championship scrap or experienced enough. There is much to consider.
Albion match report. West Bromwich Albion's championship relegation fears intensified as they lost at fellow strugglers Oxford United. The Baggies, who sacked boss Eric Ramsey after 9 games in charge following Tuesday's 1-1 with Charlton Athletic, remain a point above the drop zone. But their winless run is now up to 11 league games, as Oxford's first victory in 7 championship matches moved them 3 points off West Brom and 2 off 22nd placed Leicester City. Stanley Mills put the hosts in front as he headed home Jamie Donnelly's corner from 6 yards out before Will Lancashire rose to head in Cameron Branigan's floated free kick as the host had a deserved 2-0 lead after 26 minutes. The Baggies got a stroke of luck soon after when substitute Oliver Bostock's shot from the edge of the box was deflected into the Oxford net to cut the lead. Christian Billick should have levelled with 6 minutes to go, but he headed Alex Mowat's free kick wide. But Oxford held on for a deserved victory, just a second win for boss Matt Bloomfield since he was appointed in early January. That gives the Ewes hope of staying in the second tier for a third successive season. Having seen Leicester City lose 2-0 at home to Norwich City in the lunchtime kickoff, both sides knew a win would be of huge significance in their survival fights. The Ewes started the better as Miles, Pert Harris and Donnelly had chances deflected wide before Mills stretched to guide Donnelly's corner past Max O'Leary. Oxford's first home goal since Boxing Day that ended a club record 5 home matches without a goal. West Brom's afternoon got worse as first Mikey Johnson limped off midway through the first half in some discomfort before Lancashire rose highest to head in the second from a similar distance to Mills. Johnston's replacement Bostock was fortunate when he made it 2-1 as Jamie Cummings was left stranded in the Oxford goal after the shot took a big deflection off Branigan just as it looked as though the Baggies might crumble. It fired up the visitors who began to put some dangerous balls
into the Oxford box. But there was little final product for interim boss James Morrison's side before the break. Josh Madger had saw a weak header bounce into Cummings' arms 5 minutes after the interval, while Isaac Price had a shot blocked. West Brom upped the pressure as the half began to draw to a close, but for all their possession, there was little incision, although Orn Hegbo's wasted a decent chance with 9 minutes left. Soon after, Bilic should have earned his side a point, but missed a good-headed chance, while Oxford substitute Edomo Emaku snatched at a chance to make the game safe when he had more time than he realised. West Brom's 13th away loss of the season is the most in the Championship this season. They have not won away from home since the start of October. James Morrison said, "It's not acceptable. I thought we started the game on top in the first 15 minutes, but we knew what game plan was going to come and we didn't deal with it. They've got to take responsibility for that. Two balls in the box, two goals in the first 30 minutes. How are you supposed to have a chance of winning a game away from home? Then we were around the box. We weren't creative enough, weren't brave enough. It's deeply disappointing." Sandwell maintains vigilance against fraud. Sandwell Council's fraud team has stopped fraud and error to the value of over £800,000. The team has also stopped 24 people from fraudulently using a parking blue badge meant to help residents who have a disability, and have successfully prosecuted 13 of those people in court. The figures have been released in the annual counter-fraud report from the Council's Audit, Risk and Assurance Committee. Committee Chair Councillor Liam Preece said, "Fraud now represents over 40% of all crime nationally. So the Council has stepped up its actions to stop these criminals stealing from Sandwell taxpayers. I'd like to thank all of the teams involved for their vigilance. I hope that the work of our dedicated anti-fraud officers make any fraudster thinking about stealing from residents of our borough that we are watching and waiting to stop you in your tracks." Deputy Leader and Cabinet Member for Finance, Councillor Paul Moore, commented, "The amount of money involved in these thefts only gives us greater resolve to support our teams of investigators and to work with West Midlands Police and to support the Cabinet Office's National Fraud Initiative. We need to be clear, fraud against the Council is theft from every Sandwell resident, and we will use the full force of the law to stop it. Stopping scammers in Sandwell during International Fraud Awareness Week, the Council launched a social media campaign to raise public awareness to the most common scams and providing the public with key messages to stay vigilant to the threat fraud and criminal present. The subjects covered included online shopping scams, online and text message scams, postal fraud and front door scams, fake QR codes and friends or family needs help scams. Case studies: direct payment fraud conviction of a Sandwell resident who fraudulently obtained direct payment resulting in an overpayment of £27,500. In January 2026, he was sentenced at Birmingham Crown Court following a guilty plea to an offence contrary to Fraud Act 2006. He was sentenced to 24 months custody, suspended for 21 months. The Council are continuing with proceedings under the Proceeds of the Crime Act to recover the losses and associated costs. Blue badge fraud. An individual who was found to be misusing the blue badge of an elderly relative. He was using the badge to park while at work. He pleaded guilty to a road traffic offence of misusing a blue badge and was fined £120, as well as ordered to repay costs of £350. Experts in catching fraudsters. All investigation officers within the counter fraud unit are accredited counter fraud specialists. Two of the team are also National Crime Agency qualified financial investigators, and the counter fraud lead is a senior appropriate officer. Anyone wishing to report any suspected fraud within Sandwell can do so by emailing fraud_investigation@sandwell.gov.uk or by calling 0121 569 2650.
Hello, this is Alastair Hutton with an article from Heather. Training is underway for one of the largest litters of puppies welcomed by the charity Guide Dogs. Doggy mum Yori, a golden retriever cross, gave birth to a huge litter of 13 puppies at the end of last summer. A normal litter size averages around 7 or 8 pups. The litter has been nicknamed the Baker's Dozen, reflecting the common historical practice of bakers in rounding up a dozen loaves to 13. It's generally thought the bakers adopted this practice to make sure they didn't fall foul of strict laws that linked the price of their wares to minimum weights. In keeping with the Baker's Dozen nickname, all 13 puppies have been given bakery-themed names. The 6 girls have been called Apple, Eccles, Coco, Chelsea, Custard and Ginger. Meanwhile, the 7 boys have been named Biscuit, Crumble, Bagel, Crumpet, Pretzel, Rye and Tiger. Because of the size of the litter, it was felt that Mum Yori might struggle to look after all 13 puppies. With this in mind, for their first 8 weeks, 10 puppies stayed with Yori, while 3 were fostered by another guide dog with a smaller litter born at the same time. At 8 weeks old, the full litter of 13 was reunited at Guide Dogs National Centre near Leamington Spa. Now embarking on the next step towards becoming guide dogs, each of the Baker's Dozen has a new temporary home with one of the guide dogs' volunteer puppy raisers around the UK. They'll stay with their puppy raisers until they're old enough to join the formal guide dog training programme. If all 13 make the grade, they should be on track to become fully fledged guide dogs next year in 2027. Every year, around 1,350 puppies start their journey to become a guide dog, but it is an expensive business as it now costs £77,000 to breed, puppy raise and train each guide dog.
TNS Soundings.
Hi, it's Clive Davis from the Wildlife Sound Recording Society with your November edition of Sounds. Tony Fulford's recordings are male and female duets between several species from different countries, each introduced separately. I have added the song of a large cuckoo shrike at the end, recorded by Tony in Malaysia. It is neither a cuckoo nor a shrike, but possibly named so due to their similar features. Taxonomy can be confusing. Please enjoy.
And we begin with Agile Gibbons from Southeast Asia.
Thank you.
next to the yellow-crowned gonalec from West Africa, Ashy Taylor birds from Malaysia. Tawny owls. And finally, water rails.
And lastly, the large cuckoo shrike.
TNS Soundings.
Thank you to all our Sandwell Talking News volunteers who've read the Express and Star articles for us this week. Mia, Jan, Gavin, Linda, Janet and Trevor. And thanks to Rosie for doing the quiz. Thanks to Sue for picking all the articles that everyone's read this week. Have a lovely week, everyone. At least we can get some sunshine at last.
Thanks, Pam, especially for getting the stories to me a bit more quickly this week, as I have to go somewhere on Thursday, which is our usual upload day for the Talking News. And yes, the weather will be nice again next week, certainly warmer, because we're into meteorological spring now. Glad I could say that properly. I once heard a sketch where a BBC announcer was shot for not being able to say meteorological. And I'm not sure if I said it properly either. Though some people, including a friend of mine, reckon the spring really starts at the equinox, which is in a week or two's time. And talking of the near future, we'll be having a week off on Easter weekend, Easter Friday being the 3rd of April. The edition for the 4th of April will be missing, and we'll be resuming again with another edition for the 10th of April. But if we should change our mind about that, I'll let you know, but it's only fair to tell you. If anyone is in the least bit puzzled about my announcement about the podcast being divided into chapters, all this means is that for those who have a player that can recognise chapters in podcasts, then with our podcast, if they've got a specialist player like the Victor Reader Stream 3 or a phone app on their Apple smartphone or Android phone. I believe Downcast is one of the apps for iPhone that recognises chapters. Podcast Addict is one on Android. And it means simply that people can move between individual articles backwards and forwards like they do with the CD and pen drive editions. So it's rather like listening to your talking news on USB player that we issue to listeners, or on CD, but downloading a podcast that comes automatically, and I think Pam usually handles that on Thursday or Friday. That means that people online often get to hear the talking news a bit earlier than those who use the postal service. Hope that explanation is useful, and do remember to get the pen drives back to us on time. The post isn't always as reliable as it should be these days, but I know there are areas in Sandwell where important letters have been held back, and that's one reason why we look to people listening, dare I say it, on the Alexa smart speakers, and I hope I haven't set someone's off by saying that word, but you can listen by asking Alexa, the A-Lady, in the correct way to play Sandwell Talking News. And I think you can skip forwards and backwards by tracks using that system as well. Well, enough of my going on about these things. I hope in the not very distant future we might be able to provide some individual face-to-face training help with people who want to get used to these online things, because I'm afraid whether we like it or not, that is the way the world is moving. It's closing time now, time for In Touch, talking about holidays and other things. That's for CD and pen drive listeners. In the meantime, we'll be back with you next week for the March the 14th edition. Bye-bye from us all at Talking News for this week.
To use our Talkphone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.